Causes, the PKI and Security Podcast, where a pair of industry veterans talk about all matters digital certificates and PKI. I'm Tim Callen, Chief Experience Officer here at SecTiGo, and I'm here with Jason Sirocco, Senior Fellow at SecTiGo. How are you doing today, Jason?
Doing great, Tim, and I'm glad to be here.
All right, so we are looking at a recent news article. And this is an interesting one. You can find this in a bunch of places, but there is a Supreme Court ruling that just struck down the Chevron doctrine. Now, in case you're going, why do I care? This will very much matter to IT security professionals. Jason, what's the Chevron doctrine?
That was passed, I believe, in 1984 from a court case. It was Chevron versus...
It was also the Supreme Court. Yep.
Yes, yes. Chevron versus Natural Resources Defense Council. This Chevron doctrine allowed federal agencies, we're talking the FDA, SEC, US, right? DHS, et cetera, and it allowed those kinds of three-letter agencies to interpret ambiguities in laws. And we're talking very specifically here about cybersecurity laws now, in terms of how it's we're speaking about it now in this context, to interpret ambiguities in laws using their expertise. So the ruling, this overturning of the Chevron doctrine, this ruling now requires courts to use their independent judgment without deferring. This is huge. Without deferring to agency interpretations, even when statutes are ambiguous.
Right. This is huge, right? So in the past, what would have happened is one of these, or up until June 28th, which was when the ruling was handed down by the Supreme Court, what would have happened is the federal agency that was in charge of this particular area of cyber would have a great deal of power, would be able to make decisions and issue proclamations, and mostly those just stood. Because if you took them to court, the court would just throw it back at what the agency said, and the agency would say that, and the court would say, well, there you go. But what this ruling does, what the overthrow of the Chevron doctrine does, is it takes it out of the realm where the federal agency is the ultimate arbiter, and therefore takes it back into the courtroom again, makes a judge or a jury decide.
Exactly. So, Tim... Yeah. The reason why we're talking about it on this podcast is because if you go back through our history of 400 plus podcasts, we have spoken at length about regulatory frameworks in cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the things we put on repeat every time we do one of those episodes is we say the government typically, you know, we're here talking about the US government here, federal government, typically will stay away from being prescriptive. Mm-hmm. And there's several reasons for that. You've pointed out the one, which is tech moves on, and it's difficult for law to keep up with tech. And so it's better for a regulatory framework to say things like, all right, well, let's defer to best practices. Let's defer to things such as NIST cybersecurity framework. Let's defer to, you know, whatever the latest state-of-the-art thinking is. But here's the general regulatory framework that we want to put into place. And that's quite often, that has been the theme of how these regulations are written. That's going to have to change, Tim. And that means governments are going to have to get very wordy and prescriptive in the regulation.
Yeah. And the existing regulations aren't that way because this doctrine has been in place for 40 years.
So let's talk about some real pragmatic implications here. Mm-hmm. Agency rules, such as those from the SEC on cybersecurity and breach disclosure, that could be invalidated.
Yeah, there you go.
CISA's recent notice of proposed rulemaking, NPRM, for critical infrastructure sectors could face legal challenges. So I can foresee a whole lot of legal challenges now, Tim, right? This is the issue, is a lot of these things may go to court now. Because if any of these agencies has been putting the finger on an organization saying, hey, you're not, according to our expertise, you're not fulfilling this regulation. Well, guess what? Now companies are given all kinds of leeway legally to challenge it in court. And courts will have to interpret this rather than the agencies.
Right. So, for instance, some while ago, we talked about SolarWinds executives perhaps feeling heat, though they might have a whole different avenue to pursue now, or anybody who, any company that finds itself in violation of rules and facing, let's say, fines or other penalties might turn around and say, hey, we're going to go challenge that in court and have a perfectly valid path forward to combat that and perhaps overturn it.
You got it, Tim. Yeah. So some of the expert opinions that are out there floating around right now are saying, look, there's going to be a significant power shift from these agencies to courts. There's going to be a surge in litigation. The decision that will lead to more judicial power in interpreting federal laws. And Congress is going to have to draft far more detailed legislation going forward. And here's where opinion comes in now, Tim. Uh-huh. Have you seen Congress writing legislation that?
Oh God! Yeah, this is the problem, right?
Yeah.
Is you know, I'm you, way to wave a red flag in front of me, Jay. You know I'm going to run at it. You know, again, we've seen how legislative bodies, by their nature, are not adequate to stay up with the progression of technology. And every time that government tries to dictate how technology works, it gets itself in trouble. And the worst people at that are elected officials. They're not expert in this. They're not cybersecurity experts. Like, there's a big, broad world out there. And by the way, this doesn't even just apply to cybersecurity. And I think there are probably all sorts of areas of policy where my average member of Congress or state Congress can't conceivably be expert in this, right? They're not all experts in agriculture or geology or climate or whatever it is. And so if they can't use career experts to dictate these things, and these things have to be written into laws, I am deeply pessimistic that we're going to have good laws.
Yes, and certainly not any kind of good laws anytime soon. It has been decades since any of these lawmakers have been in the business of being prescriptive. They've been trained away from it. That has been not just their habit. That's just been like an automatic reaction now. It's like, okay, I'm going to let the experts be experts. I'm just here to draft the framework of what the law should be, you know, what I want the outcome to be. But in terms of the machinations of it, I'm no expert. I'm out of that business. And that has been decades of habit by lawmakers. There's whole generations of lawmakers who've just never done this. There's going to have to be a wholesale change of how they do business.
So I read somewhere that federal courts had cited the Chevron doctrine, or the Chevron deferment, as it's often called, more than 18,000 times since 1984. Wow. So that gives you a sense just for the kind of the scope of that as a foundational assumption. And the other point that I think you already made, Jay, but it's worth reiterating, is 1984, that means that our entire current era of internet-enabled computing is post-Chevron deferment, which means that this is just a foundational assumption that was built into all of the work that was done around anything with, internet-based or web-based or mobile device-based or consumer protections around computing. Right? I mean, literally, if you have to go back to the early 80s, that means that I was sitting in my home with my Apple III. Like it's just a whole different beast. And so the whole structure of how we even think about this has to change now.
Jeez, if I'm a lawmaker, it's like you've just entered a different world. If I'm at one of these agencies and I'm currently pursuing cases, you're now, what world are you living in now? And I just, the implications I think are very, very large. And I'm not sure if anybody's outside of the legal community or certain kinds of people in cybersecurity who follow, you know, this sort of thing. I don't think for the rest of us, I don't think any of us are following this closely enough. And that's why we're bringing it up here, because you and I have talked about this on our podcast many, many times. And now the rules have changed.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm still wrapping my head around the consequences of this. And I'm not sure I've thought of them all. Like, you think of real obvious things like the ones you rattled off. But this is a fundamental foundational assumption of how cyber regulations, not just cybersecurity, but that's the obvious one with breach laws and stuff, but all sorts of cyber regulations, this is a fundamental assumption about how those operate. You wonder also if there might be state level action. So think about how the CCPA, the California Consumer Protection Act, is a state level act that basically had the power to force behavior throughout the US, or even more broadly, because people need to be able to deal with Californian customers. And state of California is powerful enough to enforce it. I wonder if we'll see actions like that to try to bring these things back to the regulatory agencies, at least to some degree. But either way, probably nobody really understands the full consequences of this right now.
If I try to oversimplify this, and I'm definitely no lawyer, so I'm happy to be corrected, but a lot of the very recent regulatory text that I've seen recently that's been floating around, Tim, is written like this. We want to, you know, the federal government wants to be able to curb harm in some way, X, Y, and Z. And the way to enact that is to insert NIST standard here.
Right.
And in many cases, what the regulatory bodies have done is ahead of time of that have said, all right, we're going to have, like, let's, for example, a White House executive order that essentially tells NIST, you have to come up with the guidance. And then we will literally write, you know, 10 sentences around insert NIST standard here. And then that's what you have to follow. And that's the way that a lot of regulations have been written recently.
Yeah. Now, maybe that would get around this, right? Because what one could argue that is prescriptive on the part of that regulation. Like, theoretically, if Congress passed a law that said you have to do exactly what's in this document here, even if Congress didn't publish the document, I'm not sure from my layman's reading of this that part is endangered. I think more of what the problem is when there's a law that says this agency is going to tell you how to do it, right?
Right, right. But in many, many cases, I'll correct myself. In some cases, those underlying standards are the things that are used.
Yeah.
And so, in other words, what I'm trying to say is, I think that lawmakers could go off and write a law that says insert NIST standard here. However, I think, though, that means that the NIST standards themselves, although they are far more technical than what would normally be written into legislation, it's still not prescriptive to the point where people are challenging the laws. In other words,
right.
I think that these agencies are the interpreters of the standards, Tim. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Okay. All right. Well, wow. So yeah, this is interesting. I think we're going to see this playing out. I think that probably things will hit the news, not immediately, where we're going to start to see the consequences of this on cybersecurity law. And let's watch for that. And as it occurs, let's pick it up and talk about it here.
Right on, Tim. Not the least of which, and my goodness, I'd love to hear from somebody from NIST, but could courts, and I'm going to leave this final question to you, Tim, and I don't think either of us are going to have the answer.
Sure, I'm sure we're not.
Could courts start to try to ensure the application of NIST standards does not overreach legislative boundaries? That is now going to be a within the realm of the courts. It used to be in the agencies. And I think that that is going to be like, imagine somebody in a court having the technical expertise to,
interpret whether or not. Right. This is what's hard is like the average judge, I'm sure the average judge is extremely intelligent, but the average judge is not an expert on any number of areas of deep learning. Certainly the average jury member is not. And so I'm starting to imagine now, you know, people standing in a courtroom, walking in with their volumes and volumes of unintelligible scientific discussion and people having to make judgments about these things who just don't have that training. All right.
We live in interesting times, Tim.
We do that. We do that. All right. Well, more to come, I think.
Yep.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Tim.
This has been What Causes.